content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's Halaf. For the next half hour, I'll be reading excerpts of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day.
The bond between parents and children is said to be a magical thing. Sometimes that bond can better be described as interesting, at least according to Lisa Scottolini and Francesca Saratella. From their book, Best Friends, Occasional Enemies, The Lighter Side of Life as a Mother and Daughter, copyright 2011, we'll hear stories from Lisa about what a parent will do for their child, and vice versa. We start with introduction. Here's what I've learned in my life. Motherhood has no expiration date. This means that even though daughter Francesca has grown up and moved out of the house, I'm still busy being her mother and, happily, her best friend. We talk on the phone a few times a day, usually while she's walking her dog or I'm walking mine. Our dogs know all our secrets. Read this, and so will you. But to stay on point, even though my mother, Mother Mary, is 86 years old and I'm 55, she's still busy being my mother. We talk on the phone too, but less often, because her voice is always in my head. It warns me not to buy dented cans, not to leave my blow dryer near the sink, and not to put too much spaghetti on my fork or I'll choke. Her message is always the same. Beware, watch out, and small electrical appliances can be lethal. But her voice has protected me since the day it took up residence in my head, unpacking its suitcase and its traveling back scratcher. Later, when I got to be a mother myself, I became Mother Mary, only with a better car. It's inevitable, no? And now my voice will probably always be in Francesca's head. Poor thing. Raising her, I came to understand, with a sort of suburban awe, the uniqueness, the strength, and the power of the bond between mother and daughter. Mother love is like no other, and that's why we love our mothers so deeply, and also why we want to throw them out the window. Just kidding, but that's the point. This is a book about the true life laughter in the relationship between mother and daughter, written by daughter Francesca and me. Open it and laugh along. We tell the truth about each other, as well as Mother Mary. Three generations of women, sometimes under the same roof. It's either a love fest or atomic war. Enjoy! And kaboom! The Occasional Enemies Part. Daughter Francesca and I are very close, but that doesn't mean we don't fight. On the contrary, it means we do. So if you're currently fighting with your daughter, or merely fussing from time to time, you've come to the right place. Let's start with the notion that the no-fighting model isn't the best for mother-daughter relations. I know so many women who feel bad, guilty, or inferior because they fight with their daughters and they needn't. To them, and to you, I say, flip it. What? Flip that notion on its head. If you fight with your daughter, you raised her to think independently from you and to voice her own views. Yay! You're a great mother. Know why? Because the world doesn't reward the timid, especially if they have ovaries. In my opinion, conflict between mother and daughter is normal and good. Not only that, it's love. I say this not as a social scientist, which I'm not, but as a real-life mother, which I so am. So if your daughter is fighting with you, here's the good and bad news. The good news is you raised her right. The bad is you have a headache. Forever. Just kidding. Francesca and I are best friends, but at times we're at odds. Enemies only momentarily. Like most mothers and daughters, We are so attuned to each other's words and gestures that even the arching of an eyebrow can convey deep meaning. If somebody plucks, we're in trouble. We never have really huge fights, but we have car rides to New York that can feel as if they last cross-country. Wars of words. We go on and on, each replaying to the other, swept along in a girl vortex of words, during which we parse every nuance of every syllable with special attention to tone. Tone is the kryptonite of mother-daughter relationships, as in, I don't like your tone. Also, don't use that tone with me, and the ever popular, it wasn't what you said, it was your tone. It was ever thus. Francesca and I got along great from the time she came out of the egg, and I used to tell her that she wasn't allowed to whine, but she could argue with me. In other words, make her case for whatever she wanted. Never mind that she was 3 at the time. Oddly, this turned out great. She was the Perry Mason of toddlers, and more often than not, she was right. Or she felt completely heard, which was often enough for kitty satisfaction. She argued for punch balls from the gift shop at the zoo, dessert before dinner if she ate all her dinner, and the wearing of Cinderella outfits on an almost daily basis, complete with tiara. What girl doesn't want a tiara? Another thing I did, when she was little, was to let her vent. I had no idea how I came up with this idea, but I used to give her the chance to say anything she wanted to me without interruption for a full minute. And I mean anything. She was even permitted to curse at me, though she didn't know any profanity at that age. It only got as rude as butt-face. Ouch. She still permitted to argue with me and vent her anger. She accords me the same permission. Even though we're writing books together and we adore each other, we can still get mad at each other, and that valve releases the pressure from the combustible engine that is the mother-daughter relationship. It's just hot air anyway. Bottom line, we're close, so we fight. And the converse is also true. The conflict strengthens us because it's honesty, hard-earned. And the more honest we are with each other, the closer we are. You'll see exactly what I mean in the pages that follow. So enjoy, and watch your tone. The best friends part. A great thing about having a daughter is that she can introduce you to aspects of the youth culture, like hip and cool books, TV, and music. And you can teach her about ancient history, like Steely Dan, Nancy Drew, and Ozzie and Harriet. A band from the 50s, right? For example, daughter Francesca has introduced me to a lot of new music, like Rufus Wainwright, who's so hip he wrote a song entitled My Phone Is on Vibrate for You. It's a love song. To a person, not a BlackBerry. It's not the kind of song that my generation would have had, since in those days our phones had wires and we didn't have anything that vibrated. At least, not that I remember. I myself haven't vibrated in some time, but I'm straying from my point. It's cool to share stuff you love with your daughter, and sometimes you love the same thing, which is striking generational gold. Of course, this isn't confined to mothers and daughters. I remember playing the Beach Boys album Pet Sounds for my father, and he loved it. In return, he played a Nina Simone record for me. You may have to look up these arcane references, like album and record. There are many TV shows, movies, and books that Francesca and I both love, but there is nothing we love quite as much as one TV show in particular. I'm talking, of course, about Sex and the City. OMG! We became fangirls at the very mention of the title, and we love every episode, which we have memorized. We love the movies, too, and we hope that they make more sequels, so we can have more Sex in the City to see, talk about, cry, and laugh over. We love the actresses who play the girls, especially Sarah Jessica Parker as Carrie, and Cynthia Nixon as Miranda, and we love the friendship between the girls, Carrie, Miranda, Charlotte, and Samantha. So it's easy to understand why, when I heard that Cynthia Nixon occasionally records audiobooks, I asked my publisher if we could get her to record the audiobook of my next novel, entitled Save Me. The planets aligned, and so it came to pass that Francesca and I were in a recording studio in New York, and sitting on the other side of the room, behind the glass, like some rare and beautiful jewel, was Cynthia Nixon, Cue Angels. We listened rapt as she performed my novel, and she even made my writing sound good. Now that's talent. Francesca and I had recorded the audiobooks for these books, and how difficult it was, and all I had to do was be me. It took my total concentration and 3 days to read every word of a book aloud, not counting the effort to downplay my Philadelphia accent. Yo! But the recording of a novel is something different altogether. Save Me has an array of characters, female and male, and its co-star is an 8-year-old girl, with a sore throat. No joke. And Cynthia Nixon had to do all of these voices, including the sore throat, acting out not only everybody in the novel, but characterizing them more deeply, using only the nuances of voice, inflection, and intonation. She was amazing, and more than that, I was reminded of how great an audiobook is, probably the closest we get in our technological age to being told a story around a fire. During the lunch break, we got to eat with Cynthia, the sound engineer from the studio, and Laura Wilson, the audio genius from my publisher. The whole time, Cynthia was a down-to-earth, incredibly nice person, and she didn't act like the goddess she is, or could be. Francesca was adorable and charming, and I prayed there was no food in my teeth. After lunch, we went back to the recording studio, listened to Cynthia work her magic, then left before we embarrassed ourselves any further. We talked all the way home, when our conversation morphed from Miranda to the mother in the novel, then to motherhood in general, and finally to mothers and daughters. It was one of our best talks ever. Which is, after all, the purpose of the arts. Books, music, movies, opera, plays, paintings, they're all of a piece. To me, their highest and best purpose is to bring people closer, to connect them one to the other, even people who were already close, like Francesca and me. We are best friends, after all. And our relationship is made every day, in fights over green jackets, as well as in much sweeter moments, like the ones we shared that afternoon, when we were two girlfriends adoring our favorite girlfriend. Francesca and I make the good and the bad moments all the time, every day, and it forms the very stuff of our bond. I know there are lots of mothers and daughters in the world who are also best friends, and we're all of us very lucky in each other. And for those of you who aren't there yet, may I just say that can always be changed? Fixed in a New York minute. Because when Francesca and I fuss, I can feel the power I have as her mother. We, all of us moms, have that power. So if you're a mother fussing with your daughter right now, or even for the past year or years, you can change that. Don't wait for her to come around. Go first. You're the mother, right? And the alleged adult. So say you're sorry. Set it right. Do what it takes. It's not hard to make that first step when you remember how much you love her, how lucky you are to have her. Keep in mind always that you love her, and she loves you. Love really is the answer. And no one loves better, stronger, or harder than a mother. So be her best friend, and you'll get a best friend for life. Mother Mary and the Retirement Village. Sooner or later, most families will deal with the question of whether an aging mom or dad should be moved to a retirement community. The pamphlets say it's not an easy decision, and they never met Mother Mary. We begin with some background. As you may know, my mother lives with Brother Frank in South Beach, and lately they've been talking about selling their house. By lately, I mean the past 20 years. The Flying Scottolinis move slowly. So slowly, in fact, that we try to sell houses in the worst recession of all time, in which the real estate prices are at an all-time low. If you need investment advice, just ask us. We hear that tech stocks are super hot. If Mother Mary and Brother Frank sell their house, the question becomes whether they should continue to live together or whether Mother Mary should move to a retirement village. It takes a village to raise Mother Mary, and I wish it luck. Anyway, they can't decide what to do. They love living together. He's gay, and his gay friends love their moms, so they're all living in a happy circle of fragrant stereotypes. And Frank takes wonderful care of her, taking her to all of her doctor's appointments, grocery store runs, and occasional dinners out. There's a special place in heaven reserved for people who take such great care of their parents, and once my brother gets there, he'll not only get a free pass, he'll be allowed to park anywhere. By the way, Mother Mary doesn't want to live with me because she says, "All you do is read and write," to which I plead guilty. And though we prefer her to live with family, we all know that Frank might not always be able to take care of her, and that even though she's in great health now, she might not always be. So we're all confused, and I decided that we should go visit a retirement village near me in Pennsylvania, since none of us had ever seen one. In fact, we're so old school that we kept calling it a nursing home, which is the last term that applies. On the contrary, it's paradise. We were shown through a lovely building, complete with two restaurants and a pub which serves drinks in front of a big TV. We read a daily menu that included trout almondine, duck with wild rice, and baked Alaska. We toured a gym that had a jacuzzi and an indoor pool. We saw a beautiful one-bedroom apartment with freshly painted walls, cushy wool rugs, and maid service. We got two brochures on discount trips to Egypt and London. And they have a computer class, a book club, canasta, bridge, and pinochle clubs, plus yoga, aerobics, free weights, and seated exercise. So you know where this is going. I'm ready to move in. Now, say the word, retire me. I'm old enough. At least, I feel old enough. They had me at seated exercise. Exercising while seated is my kind of exercise. It's a piece of cake. Just do it. For example, I'm seated right now, watching football on TV, which I gather is unseated exercise. How conventional. All that moving around. Who needs it? But to stay on point, I fell in love with the place, and so did Brother Frank. It even had a huge train model set, which he began playing with immediately, pressing the button to make the toy locomotive chug through the fake forest until it derailed, careening off the track, and vanished into some fake shrubbery. He walked away quickly. I blamed it on my mother. Why not? It's the American way. And I bet you think you know what Mother Mary thought of the place. She loved it. Surprise! She hasn't decided when she wants to move there. And they're going back to Florida to let it sink in. We'll see what happens, and I'll let you know. I'm just happy that she didn't reject the idea outright. I think they had her at maid service. Love and worry. I have a scientific theory that the bonds that tie mothers and daughters are love and worry, like the two strands in the double helix of some very twisty DNA. In other words, if I love you, I worry about you, and vice versa. Let me explain. The moment daughter Francesca was born, I started to love and worry about her, and my worry, like my love, had no bounds. I worried if she was sleeping too much. I worried if she was sleeping too little. Same with crying, nursing, and pooping. If I was breathing, I was loving and worrying. And my biggest worry, of course, was whether she was breathing. I'm not the only mother who has watched her baby sleeping to see if her chest goes up and down. I still do that. My theory also applies to grandmothers, because they're mothers too, just grander. Mother Mary worried about Francesca, and all of our conversations back then were consumed with my worries and hers, and together we aimed our laser beams of worry on this hapless infant, which is undoubtedly why she turned out so great. Or guilty. But that's not the point herein. The point is Francesca knows we worry about her. We love her. Likewise, I know, in turn, that Mother Mary worries about me. She worries that I work too hard. She worries when I fly. She worries when I drive. She worries when I'm not at home, and even more when I am at home. For example, she worries that I could put too much food on my fork and choke. Let me suggest that this last worry isn't so dumb. You've never seen me eat. I used to feel guilty that she worried about me, but now I don't. You should worry about me. She should worry about me, constantly. It proves she loves me. I realized this when I understood how much I still worried about Francesca, even though she's living in New York on her own. I don't mean to make her feel guilty, and she shouldn't, but I can't help it. Motherhood has no expiration date, right? And what just happened is that the worry has boomeranged, and that I'm starting to worry about Mother Mary. Well, not starting. But recently, my worry, and my love, has come to the fore because of Mother Mary's health. In particular, her nose. It's blue. No joke. The last time she came to visit, the first thing I noticed was that her nose had a distinctly bluish tinge. I told her so, in a nice way, and she told me to shut up. But still, I worried, big time. Her circulation has never been good due to a lifetime of smoking, but she finally quit at age 82 when she got throat cancer. Better late than never. Anyway, she beat cancer, which is remarkable enough, but she's supposed to use oxygen at night, according to her doctor. But she won't do it. Our conversation today on the phone went like this. Ma, why don't you use your oxygen? I don't like the tube. It smells like popcorn. So what? Popcorn is good. Who doesn't like popcorn? I don't, and that's what it smells like, so forget it. But it's doctor's orders, Ma. The doctor, what does he know? I don't know where to begin. Everything? But Mother Mary wouldn't listen, even though I eventually raised my voice, which is another thing that mothers/daughters do to prove our love. If I'm yelling at you, you know I love you, because I want your chest to keep going up and down, whether you're my daughter or my mother, or whether I'm your daughter or your mother. It's all the same emotion, which is worry, or love. So the next time your mother is worried about you, don't tell her to shut up, and don't feel guilty either. Try and understand. She can't help it. It's in her DNA. Chalk it up to mom genes. Mother Mary hears the worst. The best way to deliver bad news is to be direct. So when Mother Mary answers the phone, I tell her right away, Ma, are you sitting down? Because they canceled Law and Order. She scoffs. That's not funny. I'm not kidding. Yes, you are. No, I'm not, I say. I know there are 5 stages of grief, and the first is denial, so I had fully expected her reaction. She watches Law and Order all day long. Any time I call her, I hear the ba-bum in the background. Also, she has a crush on Jerry Orbach, and I don't have the heart to tell her he's been canceled too. This can't be true, she says in disbelief. Everybody loves Law and Order. No, everybody loves Raymond, I think, but don't say. It was on for 20 years, so it lived a lot longer than most TV shows. Stop it. I know you're joking. You'll never fool me again. She's referring to the one practical joke I played in my life. To wit, she loves the lottery, and during my broke days when I was trying to become a writer, she encouraged me to buy a lottery ticket. This would be your basic Scuttolini plan for financial success. And who could blame her? Because she used to win all the time, like $500 a pop. So once, when the Powerball got up to $2 million, I called her and told her I'd bought a ticket, but I'd missed when they'd read the winning number. So you know where this is going. I read her the winning number, slowly, digit by digit, and by the time I got to the fifth, I thought she was going to have a heart attack. This was 30 years ago, and she has never forgotten. Forgiving was never in her vocabulary in the first place. To Mother Mary, forgiveness is for the weak. I try again. I swear it's the truth. Think of it this way. You'll always have the reruns. It's not the same, she says, finally believing me. She sounds so sad. My heart goes out to her. I'm sorry, Ma. How can they do that? They're so stupid, she said, angry, which I know is the second stage of grief, and probably the one where she feels most comfy. Well, I guess they know. I want to move on to more important subjects, like her health. She's supposed to be on oxygen therapy at night, but Brother Frank told me she hadn't been cooperating. Ma, how come you're not using your oxygen? I don't want to. You have to. The doctor said. I was worried. The doctor found that her oxygen levels are too low, which surprises no one but her. We Scottolinis have big noses, and she always says we get more oxygen than anybody in the room. Turns out, one of us doesn't. You need the oxygen for your blood. No, I don't. Yes, you do. Oh, maybe I do, she says, pausing. I don't understand. What? It's probably nothing, but the other night I got a pain in my arm. Oh, my God! Ma, you did! Your upper arm? Your left arm? Yes. How did you know? That's a sign of a heart attack, she scoffed. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. You're joking. You think I'm stupid. My heart's not in my arm. Ma, really... I stop when I hear her burst into laughter. That's not funny. And she can't stop laughing. Yes, it is, Cookie. And she's still laughing when we hang up.
We've run out of time for today's episode of That's Halath. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please be sure to listen next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. That's Halath is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Are you enjoying the show? Do you have any humorous quotes or authors you'd like to share? We'd love to hear from you. If you have any comments or questions about this or any other NCRS shows, please call us at 919-832-5138. Our number one more time is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.